With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom, reach new audiences, and bring important information to the public free of charge. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom and donate today. Simply go to tntradio.live. This is the Freeman Report with James Freeman on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Hello and welcome to the second hour of today's Freeman Report. It is Monday, the 22nd of April, 2024. I'm your host, James Freeman. And if you just joined me, I've been discussing worrying signs that online censorship is growing in Australia with the advent of the eSafety Office that was set up by the government in 2017 with the aim of keeping Australians safe online. Now, as well as banning posts for no apparent good reason recently, it now appears that staff at the eSafety Office have been searching for information about the family member of somebody who's been trying to hold the office to account for censorship overreach. Behaviour that is very similar to the mob's way of, you know, keeping us all safe. So I had a great conversation with Nathan there. He's going to come back because I think, you know, if we're still to believe that we live in a democracy, then surely government is accountable to the people. And when the people have concerns, what government should be doing is addressing those concerns, not looking for information about somebody's family in order to silence that person, either by intimidation or by finding information that can be used against that person who is raising the concerns. I also discussed another really important topic, the overdiagnosis of special needs in children, along with the overprescription of powerful psychotropic drugs for those kids. Now, I said it in the first hour, personally, I really do not understand how any parent could allow their child to be put on these drugs. But I guess when you normalise things via aggressive marketing and disinformation, let's be clear, from pharmaceutical companies, there are parents who are susceptible to putting their kids on these drugs. Clearly there are, because the numbers of children being put on these drugs is growing exponentially, particularly in the US, but it is a problem in other countries as well. If you missed the first hour and you fancy watching it, then head over to the website in a few hours. Just go over to tntradio.live and click on the episodes button. And there you'll be able to listen back or watch back all of my previous shows. Right, now coming up in the next hour, I'm going to be speaking with British writer and author Dr. Jonathan Swift about his new book titled COVID-19, The Birth of a Killer, which explores who was responsible or what was responsible for COVID-19. Now, I'm going to preempt you lot in the live chat because I know that you'll be saying there is no pandemic. And I agree with you. You know, when you look back at the figures, the number of deaths for 2020 and 2021, it's hardly any change at all compared to other years. And a lot of the people who died in those initial waves of COVID actually died because of the protocols that were put in place in hospitals and care homes. Anyway, while I believe it wasn't a pandemic, I do think there was a novel virus in circulation, as I caught it in April 2020, and it was like nothing I'd ever have. It was pretty unpleasant at the time. So I guess you can argue about what I caught. And yes, I guess the other thing to mention here is it is startling that flu just disappeared over the 2 years that we were told about COVID on a daily basis. But regardless, I believe there was a novel virus in circulation because, like I said, I caught it and it did take me a good month to get over it. Now, Jonathan's book explores evidence that COVID-19 was created in a lab and basically is a genetic bioweapon that was accidentally leaked from the lab. Personally, I don't think any of what happened in the last 4 years was an accident because there's just too much evidence to suggest that it was planned. But I'm always keen to hear all sides of the debate, as you often learn things through that debate, even if you don't change your mind. So all of you in the live chat, I don't want you shouting at me that there wasn't a pandemic and viruses don't exist. Just listen to what Jonathan's got to say, because we might actually learn something about the debate, even if it doesn't change our minds on things. Then to round things off today, I'm going to be speaking with Republican pollster and messaging strategist Brent Buchanan. We'll be talking about November's presidential election and which groups might decide that election. Brent thinks there are three groups that will decide the election. So we'll be discussing that and getting an assessment of the presidential race in general. To get in touch with me, as always, email me at jamesfreeman@tntradio.live. And if you want to join in the conversation with everybody, head over to tntradio.live and click on the chat icon. My name is James Freeman, and this is the Freeman Report for today's News Talk TNT.
Abroad or at home, this is your news.
By staying silent, we are part of the problem.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Right, over to our news correspondent, Gemma Cooper, for today's breaking news.
Hello there, James. Yes, some breaking news here from the UK. And an interesting debate, that one, isn't it? It's a bit of a hand grenade when you start talking about viruses and pandemics and was it or wasn't it? And yeah, I can understand, especially switched on TNT viewers and audience, the debate on the chat could well take on a life of its own, but that's the whole point.
And it frequently does, which is good. You know, I'm not telling people not to have the debate, but I quite often get it in the neck when I'm interviewing people because they disagree with, you know, their view, whether a virus exists or whatever. It's okay to have those views. Not everyone does. But I do think it's important to listen to different sides and different angles and different ways of looking at what's happened, because that's certainly how I learn a lot of things about all of this. So yeah, please don't give it to me in the neck today, live chat.
There we go. Well said for a Monday. Well said for a Monday. Well, there's quite a few headlines that have broken since we last spoke here in the UK at the top of the last hour. One headline in the last half an hour is that two men, one who allegedly is a parliamentary researcher, have been arrested and charged with spying for China under the Official Secrets Act. That's a breaking story. And there's only a limited amount we can say legally because proceedings are now active. Both men will appear in Westminster Magistrates Court in London on Friday. That's a developing story. Rishi Sunak gave his press conference this morning about Rwanda and says he's adamant flights will take off within the next 10 to 12 weeks. He's already earmarked an airfield for the planes to take off. He didn't say which one that was. And he says, come hell or high water, he wants to push the bill through, hopefully today. If not, it will certainly be this week. Also, misery for millions in the UK as five of the biggest mortgage lenders have put their interest rates up. That's despite the fact that last week we announced that the inflation was coming down and the UK was very, very slowly coming out of one of the shortest recessions we've seen. But uncertainty over interest rates means they've hiked the prices up, all the banks and corporations, leading millions to already be further cash strapped in their pockets. And also the very high profile story about Hugh Edwards, the BBC newsreader who has been suspended on full pay for the last 9 months after allegedly paying a young person money for sexually explicit images. Today, it's just been announced that he has resigned from the BBC with immediate effect. The BBC aren't commenting further. They're also not commenting on the facts that they originally came under a lot of criticism for not following up the original complaint by the young person's family and came under fire by the way they treated the family of the young person. They're not commenting on anything today. They're just saying Hugh Edwards has gone, and they're drawing a line under the whole thing.
Yeah, interesting, Rishi Sunak on the Rwanda thing. I thought it was interesting that he said 3 to 4 months until we see the flight, or 10 to 12 weeks, sorry, so three months. Because I've also seen a few analysts suggesting that the election might be called maybe for the start of the summer, June. Highly unlikely, I think. Now, I think we can put that to bed and say that's very unlikely because, you know, he keeps on talking about this Rwanda bill as it's kind of their last lifeline to try and limit the damage done to the Tories. So they're not going to call a general election until that bill has at least had time to bed in. And we're actually seeing flights going out of the UK. So I think the implication is that what I've been saying for quite some time now. I think we're going to see a general election in October. It won't be called over the summer because there are just too many people that go on holiday. All the kids are off. So lots of civil servants who would be helping to organise the election will be on holiday. And of course, MPs themselves will be as well. So I think the earliest realistic sort of point at which we will see the general election called is when MPs come back from recess, which I think it's Gemma, I'm not sure whether you know, I think it's around the time that kids go back. It might be just a week or two later than that. So I think we're going to see a general election in October, which is in itself going to be interesting because, of course, we've got the US presidential election on the 5th of November. They could be within 2 weeks of each other, which is an interesting prospect. I think it's about, I think it was the 60s the last time that happened.
Well, I mean, it's certainly sometimes what the headlines over one set of politicians across the Atlantic kind of distract from the ballot box activity on the other side of the Atlantic, can't it? You know, it's all showbiz to the masses, apparently, you know, and so sometimes it can each one can deflect each other. It'll be interesting to see. I think Sunak himself ruled out a summer election, possibly over the weekend. And I think he said he wanted to give, I think even today he's reiterated, he wants to give the Rwanda plan time to bed in. I do think today, you know, having this big press conference on a Monday morning addressing the nation with regard to Rwanda, which has dragged on and on now since 2022, I think it's the only kind of vote winner they might have up their sleeve. So that's why they're really going all guns blazing today and saying, this is the week, this is definitely, it's going to happen, stop the boats. Even the plinth on which he was standing, which we're so used to seeing, you know, over the last 4 years, stop, stay at home, protect the NHS, save lives. Now it says stop the boats. This three-word rhetoric, you know, it's a way of hammering the message home. So I think some parts of the electorate now are a little bit beleaguered. I think, you know, broadly public opinion is wanting to deal with immigration, deal with stopping the boats in some way. This has just been going on for so long now. It's everybody's getting very weary of it. Not another Rwanda headline. And it does make headlines. Absolutely. It's a very emotive issue here in the UK. And I think he's just doing everything he can to keep it in the front and center of the electorate's imagination and hoping it will work so that at least he's got something he can wave when it does come to the election time and saying, look, we did it. We got a plane off the ground. Wasn't it great? You know, and the, you know, that image of that first plane taking off, whichever airfield it is that he's earmarked for the plane to take off from. And you can imagine the media frenzy to see the few hundred trudge onto that plane and take off and you know, Rishi there with his, you know, victory hat on with it all. It's just PR spin now, isn't it? I think desperate.
Yeah. Well, I think the policy could work. I'm not sure that our government is competent enough to actually deliver it so that it will work. I mean, personally, they should get me in as an advisor because I would, as soon as you set this up, I would set it up in a way that, you know, you go to the coast in France where these boats are coming across and you distribute information, whether it's via leaflets or whatever. You think about how you do that. But you say, right, OK, over the next week, this many boats, the first ones that come across, you lot are getting shipped off to Rwanda and see what happens, because nobody's going to want to pay the people smugglers. I don't know what they're paying these days, but it is in the thousands of euros. They're not going to want to pay them just to be nabbed on the beaches in the UK or at sea, like a lot of them are. You know, tell them that you're going to have border patrol, get the Navy involved. That's what I would do. And say, look, you know, the first so many boats, you're off to Rwanda. And I think that would have an effect. But whether our government are competent enough to actually deploy and deliver this policy so that it works, I'm dubious. I really am. And as for the election overlap between the UK and the US, it could be really pivotal, that, because, of course, we've got so many international issues, whether it's in the Middle East, whether it's Russia and Ukraine, and maybe even China, if that sparks up, there's signs that the Biden administration might reignite the trade war with China because of steel tariffs. They're investigating it at the moment, and the Biden administration has said that it will triple its trade tariffs with China on steel if it finds that there's been unfair practices. All of these issues, of course, they're going to be attacking each other, Trump and Biden, and of course, you know, that can create some funny political situations where the US, what they're saying interferes with the UK election and vice versa here in the UK. So, yeah, lots for us to talk about, though, Gemma, later in the year, which, of course, keeps us busy. Right, Gemma, thank you for that. Look forward to speaking with you again tomorrow. To the rest of you, like I said in the live chat, don't give me a hard time. We're going to be talking all about COVID-19, what the origins are of it. Was it from a lab? You know, is it a bioweapon? Was it leaked intentionally? All those kind of things we're going to be talking about with Dr. Jonathan Swift, who's written a book on it recently, which I think actually gets published today. So we're going to be talking all about that after this short break right here on TNT.
TNT's David Curtin.
I really don't think that they've thought this through, because say you get to the year, okay, 2040, and anyone who's under 31 will not be allowed to buy cigarettes, and anyone who's over 31 will be allowed to. How is that going to be enforced? Will the shops require ID from 20-year-olds and 30-year-olds and 40-year-olds in the future to see whether they're allowed to purchase tobacco products or not? At the moment, there's no issue, as I say, but in the future, it's going to be completely ridiculous. I don't think that shops will want to do that. It will be essentially unenforceable.
David Curtin on today's News Talk, TNT. A better business tip from TNT Radio. The benefits of advertising on today's News Talk, TNT Radio, should be clear to businesses of any shape or size. It can be accessed anywhere, anytime, by anybody, and is the perfect way to build brand awareness and stimulate digital activity. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live. Without CO2, the world stops breathing. CO2 sustains all life on Earth. Government, the WEF, and the elite believe humans are the carbon they really want to be rid of. Today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Right. Now, I'm going to start off this conversation by saying that I think it's really important that we keep on revisiting what happened over the past 4 years with COVID. World events mean that there's lots of things to talk about, and a lot of the general public now have moved on. But there are still a lot of unanswered questions that are really important in terms of what are our governments up to? You know, was this virus from a lab? And what are they doing? Creating bioweapons that could potentially kill millions of people if that was the case. So to talk about all of this, I'm delighted to be welcomed by Dr. Jonathan Swift. Welcome to the Freeman Report, Jonathan.
Hello. Nice to meet you. Even if it is only electronically.
Yeah, thank you. Nice to meet you. Jonathan, tell us about your book that's being published. I think it's called COVID-19, The Birth of a Killer. Tell us all about it.
Yes, it's published today. A quick plug, it's available on Amazon and direct from the Bruges Group, which is a group based in London. It's my take. It's a work of fiction, I should start by saying. In actual fact, I think the real term is faction, because there is a lot of factual material mixed in with fiction there. It's about how I think that the COVID-19 pandemic, and I know there are detractors from this, but I believe it existed. And I've come to the conclusion as to who caused it. And I think it was a leak from the Wuhan Institute of Biological Warfare at the Wuhan Institute of Microbiology in China.
Yeah, now, of course, you know, if you'd said that, Jonathan, what, I don't know, 12, 18 months ago, we'd have been censored for that on Twitter. You'd have been called a conspiracy theorist. In fact, you'd have probably been called somebody spreading Russian conspiracies. It's surprising, isn't it, though? Really interesting how the debate has moved on, isn't it?
Yes, I mean, like him or loathe him, I have to cite President Trump in this, because he was one of the first, I think, to point the finger at the Chinese. And they have been manufacturing bioweapons since, I think it was about 2005. And of course, it's very easy if you want to try and disguise what you're doing, especially, dare I say it, if you are paymaster for the WHO.
Yeah.
Which by all accounts...
The other interesting thing in all of this is, you're right, this has been going on in China for some time. That's not a secret. But actually, you know, we found out that, you know, under the Obama administration, gain of function research was actually banned in America. So we know that Fauci then started to fund this research in China. So who do you think is ultimately responsible for this? Do you think it's America or do you think it's China?
I think it's China. And I'm rather disappointed because from what I've been reading, the amount of EU funding that has gone in to China to help develop these. The Chinese tend to view world wars in terms of the first one was a chemical one because of the gas in the trenches and things. The second one was a nuclear war because of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And from what I can work out and what I hear and what I read, they tend to think that the Third World War, which hasn't yet happened, but is very likely, will be a biological one. And my premise for this fiction is that they wanted to start to get ahead. They didn't want to play catch up like they have done over the last two. And they wanted to start to get ahead. And so 2005, as near as I can work it out, was when they started to produce these biological weapons in Wuhan.
But presumably, though, because the only part that doesn't seem to make sense with that argument, which seems, a sensible conclusion to make, is the fact that why was the US, the chief medical officer in the US, obviously with government resources, funding this research in China then? Because presumably, if China thinks there's going to be a world war, then I'm assuming that it thinks that it's going to go to war with the US itself. So it seems odd that the US would be funding this research in China.
When do you suggest it was funding it?
Oh, I don't have the dates here, but I know there's a lot of evidence now in the US that Fauci, there's emails and all sorts of evidence showing that they were directing funds because the Obama administration banned gain of function. So they were then getting this lab in Wuhan to do their research for them.
And the same with the EU.
Yes.
I don't know exactly why they should do that other than... The only thing I can think of is if you want to start doing experiments and developing new weapons and you're not allowed to do it in your own country, the obvious solution is you do it somewhere else. And there is a historical precedent for that. In the mid to late 1930s, the Hitler government in Germany developed the Luftwaffe and the armored units in Russia, and they were given free access to development places in Russia and aero engines and everything, because the production of these in Germany was banned under the Versailles Treaty.
I mean it's an interesting one. I'm not sure I've got an answer for that. I guess the other thing is that in your book, which, like you said, it's not it's kind of a work of fiction based upon facts, but in that it is, I think you conclude that the virus was leaked accidentally. What are your thoughts that in relation to actual real events? Do you think that if we assume it came from a lab, do you think it was by accident?
I have to say this is something I've thought about considerably while writing the book. I look at it logically. If you're going to develop and release a biological weapon, you make sure that you've got enough vaccines yourself and your population is vaccinated. which suggests to me that it was accidental, because they suffered hundreds, if not thousands, of deaths. Now, if they'd been prepared, that probably wouldn't have happened. Hence why I think it was accidental.
Yeah, which I guess, again, is a logical conclusion to make. But actually, when you start looking at a lot of the deaths, you know, they were, I think the average age of death for COVID was over the overall age of death for the population. So I think that was around 82, I think, but the average age for COVID was higher than that. And generally, most healthy people weren't impacted. So I'm not sure I would agree with that. And also, again, I think there were signs that event, I think it was called Event 201, where it was funded by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, where they actually rehearsed how they were going to deal with the pandemic literally months before it actually hit. And of course, we saw the lockstep of governments around the world and media organizations around the world. So for me, I'd love to hear what your thoughts, but for me, I just think there's so much evidence that it was all planned and it was ready to go, this big operation, that I can't believe that it was just by accident. But I don't know, what are your thoughts? Do you think I'd be listening to too many conspiracies?
No, not necessarily at all. I'm very measured in what I say. If we were to go down the route you're suggesting, which I am not decrying at all, but if we were to go down that route, then there is the serious questions for a lot of people to answer. I think we know what we're talking about.
I think you're absolutely right. I'm very, very careful with my language as well, and I like to ask questions rather than just make broad sweeping conclusions, because the truth is I don't know, still don't know what happened. I've got a lot of questions which I think are unanswered, and there's more questions pointing in certain directions than other directions. But you're right, we have got to be careful to not conclude for definite certain things. Now, Jonathan, we're just going to take a short break, but when we come back, I'd like to carry on the conversation and maybe talk about all the censorship around this as well, because yes. I think just only a year, maybe 18 months ago, your book might not have even been able to be published on Amazon. So I'd love to hear your thoughts on the censorship and how things have changed over the last 18 months. So we'll be right back with you in a moment on TNT.
Hear about it.
We're depending on our congressman.
Talk about it.
The people have to stand up and say enough.
Now, TNT Radio News.
Matt Boylan here with your TNT headlines. News Corp Australia's come under fire for publishing a hit piece on Australian-born journalist and WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange. Two Japanese Navy helicopters carrying 8 crew members have crashed into the Pacific Ocean during a nighttime training exercise off Tokyo. A volley of rockets were fired at an American military base in northeastern Syria on Sunday. And Moscow's accused Ukraine of targeting Russian journalists stationed on the front line.
Why not give TNT Radio a follow? We're on all major social platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Gab, and Getter. Help us get the word out as we cover the biggest topics of our time right here on today's News Talk. TNT Radio. TNT Radio.
Right. So, Jonathan, as I said, you've written this book. It is selling on Amazon. Presumably you're marketing it on social media and the rest of it. It is really interesting because not too further than a year ago, I think you'd have had problems actually publishing it. Have you had any indications of censorship at all with the book?
No, not at all. In the process of writing, I discussed it with friends and family. And everybody, I cannot think of anybody who disagreed. The general consensus was, yeah, of course it came from China and Wuhan. Go ahead, write it. It sounds good. That's the sort of thing. And of course, your family are always your harshest critics. And I got great support. You know, I ran a first rough draft past one of my sisters, and she said, oh, this is really good. Yeah, I agree. It seems One, she said, well, it seemed like what's that expression? A no-brainer. It's pretty obvious, isn't it? And I said, well, I think it is. And I said, one of the motivations for writing it was I was so annoyed. I can't remember. Perhaps it was 18 months ago when the WHO went into the Wuhan Institute and they were going around poking around at things. And they said, well, no, there's nothing to see here. There's no evidence of it. And I thought, oh, come on. You know, you really can't be serious on that. I don't believe that. I mean, when you talk about censorship, I think, yes, there has been censorship, but I think it's at source at Wuhan, and the people being censored are the WHO.
Yeah, and when you've, because presumably, I mean, how long have you been writing the book for?
It took about a year.
So you've been writing it for a year. Presumably, you've spoken to quite a lot of people about that. What do people make of the gain of function research as a principle? Because I think there's a lot of people around the world that think it's absolutely bonkers that we've got these labs, and there's lots of them. And I think it's actually being allowed to go on in America again now that law has been repealed. What do people kind of think about the fact that we're creating ever increasingly dangerous viruses to the human race in labs? What do people make of that?
Yeah, well, I haven't actually discussed that particular point with them, but it's coming bleakly in conversations. And I think, I personally think that it's crazy, but at the same time, I think that those responsible would argue that they have to have the virus before they can get a vaccine made to that virus. So in other words, they're suggesting that they are preparing for the worst.
Can I just ask you, Jonathan, do you think the vaccine has been effective?
Oh, my goodness. All I can say is I know somebody who's a nurse in UK, and when they were talking about the numbers who had died from COVID, she suggested that, in fact, a lot of these people were going to be dying in any case. And because they had COVID, that was put down as the reason for death. And this is another big area that there's a lot of debate about, I know.
Yeah, of course. I mean, I've spoken to many, many world-leading doctors on this, and I think the conclusion that I've come to, and I'm not the only one, is that a lot of the protocols that were used in hospitals, like ventilators, and the protocols in care homes, such as putting patients, old people on midazolam and morphine, that actually killed a lot more people than any kind of respiratory virus. And of course, we usually see a spike around that time of year. Back, I think it was in 2018, we had a particularly bad year of the flu then, where we saw lots of people die. So I think there are a lot of question marks over the virus. Have you had many discussions about the WHO? I'm not sure, Jonathan, if you're aware that there's this new pandemic treaty that the WHO is trying to push through.
No.
Yeah, so maybe that could be your follow-up book. So the WHO at the moment it's called the Pandemic Accord. And it wants every single member, WHO member, so there's 192 countries to sign up to this. And essentially it will give the WHO legal powers over all of its members. So when it next decides to call a global pandemic, which it can do independently, there's no accountability for that, it will actually have legal powers over all the countries to enforce restrictions like lockdowns, masks, and maybe even mandate certain medicines. So I think there's a James Bond type film or book you could write about that, I think, next.
Excuse me for being cynical, but the idea of the WHO telling the Chinese Communist Party what to do is just something that beggars belief. they'll probably say, yes, we'll do what you want. And then they'll go ahead and do whatever they want in any case. So I understand what you're saying, but I don't believe in the practical value of it.
That's a very, very good point. I've never actually, I mean, I've had lots of discussions about this new treaty. But, you know, I guess you've got to think, well, who runs the WHO? It's going to be the bigger countries in the world. So maybe this is actually a device for those countries controlling some of the smaller countries, because you're absolutely right. I mean, you know, China didn't cooperate at all with the WHO during the early days when it wanted to investigate where the virus was coming from. China wouldn't let them in, would it?
Well, I asked myself when that was happening, I thought, you know, why don't they want them to find out where it's coming from? Unless they already know. Perhaps I'm being too cynical, but it's like there's a certain, I don't know, mentality associated with this. I'll give you one example. It's nothing to do with viruses, but after the EU imposed, what was it now, 15, 20 years ago, smoking ban inside restaurants and cafes and things, I was in Valencia in Spain about a week after it had come in. I was getting something at the bar, and there's the barman standing there cutting ham, and he's got a cigarette out of the corner of his mouth. And I said to him, I thought there was supposed to be a ban on smoking. He said, "Yeah, that's Brussels. We don't take any notice of Brussels in Spain." Now, how true that, how representative that was, I don't know, but I just found it very funny.
Yeah, I guess you can argue, though, that a lot of us thought, you know, if somebody had told me before the pandemic that millions of people across the West would have agreed to lock themselves in their houses and wear masks when they went out on the street, I'd have said, you're absolutely mad. But hey, presto, that's exactly what we saw happen. So so who knows?
But of course,
Jonathan.
If you have a look, I've done a blog on the Bruges Group website. I can't remember. It was about that time. And it was obvious. You look at the reports, and not everybody did. There were thousands of people fined, if I can recall correctly, including some real high-profile people. And that never really got into the mainstream media, because I don't think they like reporting things like that.
Yeah. And of course, those fines have, well, 90-something percent of them, most of them have been up. Well, the appeals against them have been upheld, and they never had to pay that, because, of course, it's all the whole law around masks and the whole thing was a bit of a sham, to be honest with you. But Jonathan, we've run out of time. Thank you for coming on the Freeman Report to talk about your book. All the best for the future. Thank you, Jonathan.
Thanks very much. Nice.
Thank
to
you.
Speak. Cheerio.
Right. OK, we're going to take a short break now, and we're going to then jump over the pond to America. I'm going to be speaking with Brent Buchanan. He's a Republican pollster there. He thinks he knows which three groups in the US are going to decide this year's election. So we'll be talking all about that and getting his assessment on where he thinks the campaign of Biden and Trump is generally at the moment. So don't go anywhere. Stay right put where you are, right here on TNT.
I was a quarterback at Hardaway High School. College first round draft pick, on and off the field. We were taught to not show any signs of weakness. During the football season, I would stop eating. But I didn't know I was depressed. I thought that something was wrong with me. For 20 plus years was physical, physical, physical. We didn't have any education behind what mental health was. I started to learn it starts here first. If this is together, I'll be better as a father, as a man, and as a husband. Put the importance on your mental health. I'm not scared to talk about it anymore. The first tool is therapy. The second one is positive self-talk. And then journaling, putting your thoughts on paper. We have to redefine what being a strong man is and heal. Love your mind.
Are you ready to help your family get prepared for the unexpected?
Here we go!
Ladybug and Cat Noir know how important it is to be ready, because you never know when Hawk Moth is going to strike or a disaster will hit. And you don't need miraculous powers. Just put those planning skills you already have to good use. Make a plan that will help you and your family be ready when emergencies happen. Ready Kids can help. Get started at ready.gov/kids.
James Freeman on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Right. OK, so we're going to, for the final part of the show, we're going to talk about the US presidential elections. I'm absolutely delighted to be joined by Brent Buchanan. He is a Republican pollster, and he thinks he's identified the three groups which could decide this year's election. So welcome to the Freeman Report, Brent.
Yeah, thanks for having me, James. Appreciate it.
So, Brent, before we get into the detail on the polls and these groups you've identified, I wonder if you wouldn't mind just giving us your assessment overall of where you think the campaigns are for Biden and Trump at the moment.
Well, I would say we've got to temper everything and realize that we're 198 days away from this election, and that is a political eternity. So anything we're looking at now, we can look at past trend lines and say, okay, well, we might be headed this direction, but I think we're in for several black swan type events between now and then. They're going to impact the election, but let's say it was held today, just for the sake of the discussion. And I would say that currently Joe Biden's losing, which is a unique framing in that it's not that Trump is winning, it's just simply that Joe Biden is losing. And it's been really interesting to see in the past 10 to 14 days or so since Donald Trump has been holed up in a courtroom in New York City with a gag order placed on him. And Joe Biden has spent over $25 million in television and digital advertising that you actually can see the race tightening up some right now. But I think that's simply the fundamentals of Trump has been sidelined by the Department of Justice, and Joe Biden has free rein on what's being talked about right now.
What do you make? I'd love to get your opinion on what you make about the Kennedy family, because I was quite surprised actually to see all the videos, the marketing stuff coming from the Biden administration, all of Robert's family, extended family, coming out in support of Biden. I guess, first of all, what's going on there? Is this some kind of family rift? And secondly, I'd love to hear your opinion on what impact you could have. You think that could have? Because I think a lot of analysts were saying that RFK's, those who were going to vote for RFK would actually be in the main damaging Biden as opposed to Trump.
Yeah, we still hold, based on our polling data, that Kennedy being in the race does more damage to Biden than it does Trump, especially when you look at where he's most likely to be on the ballot. You know, him being on the ballot in California or New York is completely irrelevant because Trump is never going to win those two states. But, you know, I think this is definitely tongue in cheek. But, you know, most Americans were waiting with bated breath to know what the elites of New England were going to tell them how they should vote. And that's basically how most people see that part of the Kennedy family. And I mean, if you just look at them, they just look like New England elites that have never talked to somebody that was not a trust fund baby. And they don't hang out with any regular people. And it really, in my mind, came across like that. And so if you're looking at some of these voter groups that we're going to talk about here in the closing of your show, it speaks zero to those groups at all. It just reinforces these, you know, elite, highly educated folks that make up the Democrat base of the party right now.
But do you think this is damaging potentially to RFK? Because it must be pretty embarrassing for him, because it's clear that's what his intention, you know, it's designed to do, isn't it? Is to damage his campaign. Do you think, how damaging do you think this is for his votes?
I don't think it's a single event that's going to cause some sort of silver bullet moment for his campaign that really takes him out. I mean, one thing we've seen in our data, and you can visit our website at cygn.al and view it. If you look at the trend line in the last 4 months on RFK Jr., he's already been trending downward in our polling data. And this is something that we said a year ago was going to happen. Because elections are about choices. And in a two-party system like the United States, the choice is between the two parties. And most people who are saying they're going to vote for RFK Jr. right now, it's simply a protest response. He's likely to get probably around the vote share that most independent type candidates, you know, outside of like a Ross Perot 1992 with tons of money, would get in a normal U.S. election.
Yeah. Okay, let's talk about those groups that you've identified. I think you've identified three groups. Tell us what they are and how you think they could impact the election.
Yeah, definitely. So I think the first one is the most important because it really ties into what has been happening. And this is not just unique to the US. I mean, we do work in the UK and Australia and in other places where your listeners come from, and Europe and Asia and South America. And the same trend is happening everywhere of the last couple decades. And that is that the highly educated elites are the one who are now the progressives, the left, the Democrats in the US. And the working class and the regular people are flipping and becoming the base of the whoever the center right party is in a given country. And if you consider that trend being so crucial to what's happening now in politics, you realize that the group we identified, it's a really long name, but we call them the ticked off young working class diverse voters. And it's so many names because they really don't look like a group that you would say, okay, this group is going to determine the outcome of the U.S. election. But it ties into that trend that has been happening in politics all around the world, where the elites know better than the rest of us. And so they're the progressive left, and they control the media, and they control the money, and they control everything else, but we control the votes. And so as you look at this group of people, you realize, okay, they're less white than the Democrat or Republican base. They're younger. The bulk of them are under the age of 45, which is not a group of voters that I've been in Republican politics for 20 years. That's usually the group of voters that we strike from the voter contact plan because we're not going to waste any time on them. What's really interesting about this group is they are hyper focused on inflation and cost of living. And if you followed any U.S. trends on issues in the past several months, you'll notice that illegal immigration really shot up as a topic. But it was simply just a reallocation of Republicans saying inflation and flipping to immigration. It wasn't actually this issue that's going to define the election. I still think it's going to come back to this cost of living and to inflation, because when you think about who this group is, I mean, they're younger, they're more likely to be parents, they're diverse, they're lower educated, they're lower income. This cost of living crisis is impacting them more. And what's most fascinating is that neither major party candidate has done a good job speaking to them, because when you look at who they say they're voting for in this head-to-head ballot, even though that's not going to be what's actually on the ballot when they go and vote, they splinter and disappear, and only about 20% of them pick one of the two major candidates when offered all the potential candidates. And so that just shows you how ticked off they are at the top two candidates. And so it's going to come down to who can cast a vision for their life being better than it's been the last 4 years.
And I'm not an expert, or I don't have a lot of knowledge on polling and voting in America. But in the UK here, generally, elections are decided by the older demographic in the country. Young people generally, although they get very excited and say how angry they are with politicians and the government, you know, the fact they can't afford to get on the housing ladder and all these other issues we've got in the UK. When it comes to election, actually, the turnout isn't great. Is that the same in America, or are they more engaged?
No, I would say it's pretty similar. And so when I say under 45, it's probably best to divide that group up, kind of what you're speaking to, James, in that let's look at Gen Z, which I kind of write off because they don't live in reality. But if you look at kind of the middle bracket of millennials to older millennials, which I fall into kind of that older millennial bucket, where we're trying to make ends meet and have children, and you know they're trying to teach our kids that they can choose what gender they are. And you look at all the radical things happening, not just from, hey, it's harder to go buy groceries, but simply to this radicalism that's being pushed on my children that is very different from what I grew up in. I think if we look at this more of like 30 to 45 or 30 to 50 right. is probably a better group to look at. But you're exactly right about older voters. And one thing we've noticed both in the UK and here is that those older voters are actually becoming more center left than they have historically. That group used to be the bastion of the center right's voter base. And we've just seen, we did Donald Trump's polling in 2020 for the last 9 weeks of his campaign. And we kept referring to it as the senior ceiling. Now, again, that was during COVID. There were a lot of other extenuating factors at that time. But that senior ceiling continues to lower and lower and lower on center-right candidates. And I think it's because they're terrified about this, quote, threats to democracy, which really just is code word for Donald Trump.
Yeah, that's interesting. That's interesting. I mean, what would you say, I don't know whether you poll on this, but what are would you say are American views more broadly of January 6th? I mean, do people really believe that Trump was responsible for an insurrection there? Or because there's a lot of evidence to suggest there's a lot more to it than that. And that, you know, the Democrats were involved in allowing that to happen on Capitol Hill. What do Americans think more generally?
I think that they don't want to think about that time period. Not just January 6th, but just in general, that whole COVID era of massive amounts of poor government decisions that caused huge damage to education, to the economy, to small business, to national debt. I think they're going to, the further we get away from it, the more they're going to lump that into that period of their life that they don't want to think about. And this, it was really interesting to see Joe Biden a couple weeks ago start to try to define Donald Trump under terms of his leadership of COVID. And we're just of the belief that people are ready to move on, that life has gotten harder since that period. And they're just looking for somebody to cast a better vision for them of what their life can look like on the other end of this election. And I would say that neither Donald Trump nor Joe Biden have actually done a good job of that yet.
Yeah, and of course, I mean, Biden, I don't know what the polls are showing to you at the moment, but, you know, he's 81. I think it's obvious to everybody now. I don't think this is an outlandish thing to say, but he's clearly not up to the job. I think most Americans are dissatisfied with him being his presidency in the US now. Do you think that's, how much of an impact do you think that's going to have on the election?
Well, we do a lot of academic research and read a lot of academic research. And the most motivating factor to anybody's vote choice and the fact that they show up or not to an election is their emotions around it. How do they feel about the candidates? How do they feel in general? And what do those emotions look like? And the number one emotion to turn voters out is anger. And if you think about the non-Donald Trump vote, they're not for some other candidate. They're against Donald Trump. Right. And so Joe Biden, when you ask the question of are you voting for Joe Biden or against Donald Trump, it is heavily against Donald Trump, not for Joe Biden. And I think that's only going to increase as Joe Biden's image continues to falter, as he physically continues to falter, mentally continues to falter. And so it really is like this election is about what is Donald Trump going to do? What's he going to say? And is he going to make this about the past or is he going to make this about the future? Because his saying of make America great again was a play to nostalgia to these voters who said, yeah, my life actually was pretty good a decade, 2 decades, 3 decades ago, and it sucks now. And this guy's going to make it like it used to be. And because he's already been president, it's not like he's just this challenger that gets to come in and say, I'm the change election, even though I do think this is more like a 2016 change election than it is a 2020 choice election in the United States. And so if you think about it from an emotional standpoint, this ticked off, diverse, working class young voters that we've identified, they've got the anger there, but they also have apathy. And those are kind of two emotions that are playing at each other right now with this voter group. But I think Biden's going to get what Biden's going to get because it's not Trump, not because it's for Biden.
And of course, you know, we've got this criminal case going on with Trump at the moment. He could make a lot of people angry, all of the things and the facts coming out of that. So that could increase, I guess, turnout for Biden as well.
I think it's going to help Trump also, because if you think about that coalition I was talking about, how diverse they are, and you look at some of the trends, especially with younger to middle-aged non-white men, they definitely feel like the system is rigged against them. They're more likely to get pulled over by the police. They're more likely to have the law come after them in some way or another, or get caught for something that a white person might not get caught for. And if you're one of those voters looking at Donald Trump, all of a sudden you get to build this connection with a guy that just had the same life experience as you. A loudmouth billionaire from New York City just had the same life experience as you. And I think that's actually going to drive some of these voters in this key segment to Trump because of that common experience that is being created between them.
Yeah. Like you said, I think there's 190 days between now and November, so a lot's going to go on. We've only got about a minute left, so I'll just ask you what top event you think might happen. But you did mention Black Swan events. What do you think is the most likely that we'll see before the election?
I think at this point, it's going to be that inflation rears its head again. I mean, if you look at the causes of, at least in the U.S., of inflation, it was out of control government spending. And the U.S. Fed is stuck in this odd place where they've got to control inflation through interest rates, which damages regular people. And so I think that's going to, at this point, that's the most likely thing that's going to really throw a wrench in the U.S. election.
Well, given all the things which are possible, like wars and whatever, I think if we're going to have a black swan, I think I would choose that one over some of the other ones. Brent Buchanan, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for coming on the Freeman Report. Brent, you must come back and give us an update on how the polls are going as we go towards the election. Thank you very much.
Hey, thanks, James.
Right, that's it for me today. I'll be back tomorrow to do it all again, but don't go anywhere because we've got more great shows coming up right here on TNT.